Oh, hello there. Welcome to another edition of The Leftovers. Really do appreciate you tuning in. This is a part of the Jason Ranch Show experience that covers content we didn't get a chance to talk about on the show. And instead, we don't just throw away all the show prep we just did, because I prep for everything. Instead, I bring you some of the stories because I don't want to shut up yet. At least not yet, although I'm going to be honest, this feels like a long week. Am I the only one who thinks this is feeling like a long week? It's only Thursday, and today it kind of felt like a Friday, which those shows are a little bit goofier, I guess. Only to then realize, oh God, tomorrow's Friday, and I've got to write an editorial tonight for Fox. I'm just tired. But enough about me complaining. I was on Fox News this morning. I was talking about one of the topics that was brought up was Sheila Jackson Lee, who was getting just completely ripped because of the comments she made on the eclipse day, in which she, I guess, doesn't understand how moons work.
And sometimes you've heard the word full moon.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you need to take the opportunity just to come out and see a full moon is that complete rounded circle.
I know this.
Which is made up mostly of gases.
No, that's not true.
And that's why the question is why or how could we as humans live on the moon?
Are
the gases such that we could do that?
There's no atmosphere.
The sun is a mighty powerful heat.
That's true.
And it's almost impossible to go near the sun.
No, I mean it's
the moon
impossible.
Is more manageable.
No, they're both equally unmanageable. So she has since responded to the ridicule, and she's kind of doubling down on just this like weird defense. She can never be wrong, really. She's taking a little bit of responsibility in the sense that she said, and this is, I'm not making this up. She said she was, quote, obviously, end quote, misspeaking. Okay, what's she mean to say? I meant to say the sun. But as usual, Republicans are focused on stupid things instead of stuff that really matters. Okay, you meant to say the sun? At what point did you mean to say the sun? Seriously, at what point did you mean to say the sun? Because it actually sounds worse. It's a dumber comment if you were talking about the sun. Because the context wasn't just about gas. It was about whether or not one could survive. And she was arguing that one can survive on the moon because of the gases. Well, the sun has a whole lot of hot gas, right? Talk about hydrogen, helium. Throw in carbon, nitrogen. Oxygen, I think, though, is really, really small. There's probably some other elements I'm forgetting. I don't remember third grade science. But if she was talking about the sun, then she was actually making an argument to live on the sun? Well, that's not good. And what's this whole idea about living on the moon for you? There is no atmosphere. I get that you can see in some of these movies, it's not necessarily on the sun, it's usually on Mars or some unnamed planet, where you've got all of these very intricately built, specifically for the planet, domiciles and little communities in which only a handful of people even live at. And it's always an experiment, one that's going to take a very long time for a variety of reasons, like, you know, food, of which there's none on the moon, water, of which there's none on the moon. And again, that whole atmosphere thing that doesn't exist on the moon. So there's no oxygen that is trapped. There's no heat that's trapped inside of the atmosphere, which means it's very, very cold. I honestly can't believe. And by the way, kudos to her for running her own account on Twitter, because she clearly wrote this. Because if she gave this to a comm staffer who probably doesn't even want to answer the phone when she calls for fear that she's going to berate him, if anyone saw that, they would say, no, let's not say that. Let's maybe clarify a little bit more. Which part of the sun? Because you even go on to say that you can't live on the sun, but you can live on the moon. But if you were saying sun when you meant moon and moon when you meant sun, not very good. This I totally forgot about. But at one point, years ago, there was a little bit of a back and forth with NASA and with Sheila Jackson Lee when she made a demand of NASA to show her the flag that was planted on Mars. And they were all like, I think you misspoke, because apparently you do that a lot. You mean the moon. And as I recall, she accused the pushback, she accused it on racism. I'm almost certain that that was the case. So this is just kind of funny. It's never going to end. And like I said on the air yesterday, on my regular show yesterday, I kind of like Sheila Jackson Lee because she's just mean. She's like a mean boss and she owns it. And I kind of like that. And you could always tell that she's mean. You don't even have to get a story to be leaked about how mean she is. You can just look at her. She just looks angry all the time. All the time. She never seems to be excited. Even yesterday, or what was it? Tuesday. Today's Thursday. Even Tuesday when she was giving that speech to high schoolers, she went on in her tweet to say, oh, you know, I was there because I was trying to get people excited. Get people all excited about the eclipse. Did she sound like she had a tone that would excite anybody about anything? She could have been talking about handing out free convertibles. And people were like, why are you so angry and sad? What's going on? And maybe because I identify with that. Because I'm angry and sad all the time too. Maybe that's why I kind of like her. Other than that, though, she's horrible. Second Amendment advocates are slamming a new rule from the Biden administration requiring thousands of firearm dealers all across the nation to run background checks on buyers at gun shows or other places outside of brick and mortar stores. Now, this is one of those rules that probably won't elicit a lot of outrage from people who are open-minded about guns. I'm not talking about pro-gun people or anti-gun people. The person who just, you know, yeah, it's not for me, but I don't particularly care if someone has a firearm kind of person. Because this is seen as a loophole that's reasonable. And while I understand why people are annoyed by this, I totally understand it. The fact of the matter is, this is something that you're just going to have to get used to. Now, Second Amendment advocates per Fox News are slamming the new rule, claiming that it closes a loophole that has allowed tens of thousands of guns to be sold every year by unlicensed dealers who don't perform background checks to ensure the potential buyer is not legally prohibited from having a firearm. But the National Association of Gun Rights, for gun rights, told Fox News Digital that the new rule will, quote, outlaw virtually all private sales of private firearms between individuals. That's the part you got to focus on. That's the part. Now, depending on the state you live in, you still might even have to go through a background check, like Washington State. But that's not the case everywhere. They continue to say in a statement, or the president, Dudley Brown, and as we saw in the Brian Malinowski case in Little Rock, the ATF is willing to use outrageously excessive force, including murder, to punish violators. This rule brings us one step closer to Biden's dream of universal gun registration enforced by the ATF's jackbooted thugs. It's a little over the top with the language, jackbooted thugs, you know, dial it back just a little bit. I'm on the same side as you. The Second Amendment Institute told Fox News Digital the ATF's new rule is, quote, another example of them going beyond their statutory authority for political purposes. It infringes upon the rights of law-abiding citizens and adds unnecessary burdens to those seeking to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now, the Gun Owners of America's Director of Federal Affairs, Aidan Johnston, accused the Biden administration of, quote, weaponizing every tool in their toolbox to intimidate, harass, and criminalize gun owners with unlawful executive actions. I don't know if this is unlawful outside of the executive. So a good news, bad news situation is, I imagine this does get challenged. It does get tossed because of just the boring reason, the statutory authority. But then I think it just inspires local governments to do this. And if you live in a red state, then you're probably fine. That's my guess. If you live in a blue state and you haven't already had to deal with this, well, then you're going to be going through the process. I saw some stat about how gun licenses, concealed carry licenses, I believe it was, are like 70% lower now in Washington state, which is precisely what the goal of all the anti-gun legislation was. And they don't even hide it. They want to ban guns. They don't even pretend to not want to ban handguns anymore. You remember how they used to say, we're not talking about getting your guns and banning guns. We're not talking about going to your homes. We're not talking about that Glock you have or Sig Sauer. We're talking about the AR-15s, the weapons of war. They don't even do that anymore. They really don't. They'll still focus more on weapons of war, but they don't even downplay the fact that they're going after all guns, and this is just the next step in that direction. And then finally, I didn't get a chance to talk about this on the radio. I kept it on my little show sheet for the last 2 or 3 days because I wanted to. I just didn't have time. But it was about the NPR editor, Uri Berliner, who wrote the essay that was published all about how, and this was in the Free Press, all about how left wing the NPR newsroom has become, and really criticizes their handling of certain specific stories, like, for example, the Hunter Biden laptop. After this essay came out, and by the way, he still works there. After the essay came out, I think it was the executive editor for NPR, one of the top dogs in the newsroom, if not the top dog, came out and she basically said, look, you know what? We're totally okay with having open dialogue and we should be critical if it's done in good faith. However, ... And then she just defended everything that has happened with NPR. And it's so clearly left wing. Why not just own it? Because they know then they lose funds. But we all already know that they shouldn't be getting tax dollars. We know that now. We know that now because, hey, guess what? They're far to the left. They're partisan. Everyone knows it. And anyone who says otherwise is just lying to you. And the people who say otherwise are liberals who like NPR. And they want to keep it there. And they don't want to compete in the marketplace like the rest of the radio stations, like we do at KTTH. They raise money, sure, but they get a ton of money. You think we get a ton of money from the government? Unless some government agency is buying ads and they're buying it at normal rates. We don't get any government funding like this. And so what do at KTTH to stay on air? Well, we've got salespeople. They're going out, they're knocking on doors, trying to get some, you know, quality advertisements. That's what keeps us up and running. And that's why, you know, we put a lot of effort and energy into making sure when I do an endorsement, I want to make sure that they're the best of the best. If my voice is coming on an ad, they better be the best of the best because we rely on you guys who listen to then, you know, buy a product, shop at a store, order a service, whatever it is, from our advertisers. And I want to make sure that you have a good experience. And if you don't have a good experience, well, guess what? The next time I recommend someone, you're not going to believe me. That's the truth. And so we all here put a lot of energy and effort into that, which is a reminder to go with all of our wonderful sponsors. But at the end of the day, everyone knows precisely what NPR is. And there's an updated story in the New York Times that came out today talking about there was, quote unquote, internal tumult. He said that it's erupted among Berliner's colleagues and NPR leadership. They say the essay was brought up at what was described as a, quote, long scheduled meet and greet with hosts of NPR's biggest shows on Wednesday, where NPR editor-in-chief Edith Chapin reportedly said she did not want a Berliner to become a martyr. Mr. Berliner's essay also sent critical Slack messages whizzing through some of the same employee affinity groups focused on racial and sexual identity that he cited in his essay. In one group, several staff members disputed Mr. Berliner's point about a lack of ideological diversity and said efforts to recruit more people of color would make NPR's journalism better, the Times said. Of course, that completely misses the point. He's talking about ideological diversity. You getting someone who happens to be black or Latino or Native American, for example, does not address ideological diversity. It doesn't. Unless you're trying to find someone who is conservative and black or Asian or Latino or Native American or whatever. Because right now, just based on demographics, with the exception maybe of Latinos, but certainly of those who work in media and of those who would want to work in NPR, if you're getting someone just on the basis of skin color, you're not even coming close to guaranteeing a shot at ideological diversity. That's the truth, unfortunately. It's so weird how they don't really understand that. A producer of NPR's Morning Edition reportedly rejected the Berliner case about why NPR's audience has dwindled in recent years, insisting a variety of factors contributed to it. NPR managing editor of Standards and Practices, Tony Calvin, disputed Berliner's bias assertions and claimed the essay will likely make it more difficult for NPR journalists to do their jobs. Uh-huh. You're going to have a harder time being propagandist for liberals? Says the next time one of our people calls up a Republican congressman or something and tries to get an answer from them, they may say, well, oh, I read these stories. You guys aren't fair, so I'm not going to talk to you. They probably say that now. The ones who give you a comment aren't doing so because they think you're being fair. They're doing so so they can at least try to get the other opinion presented. Others took to social media to weigh in on Berliner's essay. NPR TV critic Eric Deegans, or Deggins, slammed the quote-unquote terrible piece and swiped at Berliner for not seeking comment from NPR before being published in the free press. Why would he do that? He doesn't have to do it. He's giving the opinion of where it is he works. He's not doing journalism in the traditional sense of like a hardcore deep dive report. He's giving his opinions, and they're valid and they're right. NPR correspondent Brian Mann, who described himself as an aging rural white man, which is definitely something a far-left lunatic would put in their bio. They would never do that. Said he, quote, felt welcome, supported, heard, and respected by my colleagues. Huh. Maybe there's too much white privilege there. Jeffrey Dvorkin, the former NPR ombudsman, said Berliner was not wrong, while former managing editor Chuck Holmes commended Berliner's brave essay on Facebook. So the people who don't work there, they're all in. They say, yep, it's right. Now, Berliner told the Times that while he hasn't been disciplined, he, quote, received a note from his supervisor reminding him that NPR requires employees to clear speaking appearances and media requests with standards and media relations. The Times noted that Berliner said he did not run the remarks he told the paper by NPR. Now, that's going to be a separate issue. And frankly, here's me being totally honest and upfront. If he were to get fired for this, for violating that rule, it's a clean firing. It would be a bad look. Optics is probably the only thing keeping NPR, at least at this point, from terminating him. But yeah, he's right to be called out on that. Now, am I glad he did it? Yeah, it was very brave of him to do this because he knew that this was going to cause some problems for him at NPR. Maybe he's already on the way out and he just hasn't told anybody yet. But based on reading the essay, it's very well written. First time I've ever said that about an NPR staff member. But it certainly seems like the real reason behind this was he wanted to see some ideological diversity. And he thought by making this kind of splash, it would actually move the needle. It would put enough pressure on them. Now, will it? Probably not. I honestly don't think that they're capable of changing. And the only thing to do is to take away their funding. If they're so loved by everyone, then they can compete like every other radio station, like every other commercial radio station. There is no reason for NPR to get a single penny of tax dollar support. And that's the bottom line. I slam my hand on the table to indicate that I'm done. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see you tomorrow.